SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
We are live right here on hour number two of the early line. Kevin Walsh and Donnie Wrightside on a Wednesday morning talking through a lot of the major headlines throughout the sports world. And in our upcoming segment, we will talk to Rick Caro about the legal ramifications of Brian Flores' lawsuit against the NFL, as well as the Miami Dolphins, the New York Giants, and the Denver Broncos. All of this tremendously important news that we will continue to keep tabs on. But as always, we keep tabs on the Super Bowl. As Super Bowl 56 continues to inch closer, and each and every day we want to talk about some of the different markets and the things that do jump off the page here. And one market I wanted to talk about here as a primer, a setup, because there's already been change, somewhat unsurprising, within this market here. Matthew Stafford is the favorite for the Super Bowl MVP at a plus 115 number. Joe Burrow, the second choice, at plus 230. And then that third choice, Cooper Kupp at plus 550. Kupp has been continually, clearly bet by a lot of people out there, as his plus 550 number was plus 700 when we saw this initially open. People really buying into Cooper Kupp's chances to win this award as the top target in this Rams offense. Of course, the team favored to win the football game. Donnie, when you see the early Super Bowl MVP odds, what jumps out to you?
Quarterback award, right, KW? Quarterback award. Matthew Stafford plus 115 here at the FanDuel Sportsbook. Joe Burrow plus 230. So you're figuring if either one of these teams, well, obviously one of the teams has to win the game, you're expecting it to be a quarterback-driven award. Unless, we've talked about this already, and I'm more interested in this. As I said, the 49.5 is a total in this game, dropping down to 48.5. We'll see where that settles in. But if you get more of a defensive show here, maybe you should start looking at some of the defensive players and the more long shots or the secondary type players, because there is a world where the Rams can win this football game with Matthew Stafford throwing 220 yards and for two touchdowns. Mm-hmm. But of that, maybe Cooper Kupp gets 115 yards and those two touchdowns, or more likely here, if this game ends up 17-14, 24-17, and Aaron Donald has three sacks, including a game-winning strip sack fumble that clinches the outcome. So you take a look at Aaron Donald, that 17-1 price. That's already dropping because we saw that as high as 20-1 and even more at some points here. But to me, my initial diagnosis of this market, it's the same every year, Kevin. It's a quarterback award. They want to give it to the quarterback here. So Matthew Stafford plus 115, Joe Burrow plus 230. That makes sense here, but I think more than ever, there's some interesting things that you can move down the line, because how many times do we see a Super Bowl? The reason why your team is there, why? Great quarterback play, superstars. Tom Brady is there. We don't care what the final score is. If a Tom Brady team won, he's getting the award. Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs, we don't care about what the actual final score was or what his statistics are. If they won, he's going to get it. I think there's a little bit more leeway, Kevin, in this game with Stafford and Burrow and the rest of the guys that actually have a legitimate chance to take this down.
The thing is, we've been trying to set people up for this throughout the entire Rams postseason run. We asked at the end of the game against the Bucs, Donnie, if this was the Super Bowl, who wins the MVP? And we asked after the game against the Niners, Donnie, if this was the Super Bowl, who wins MVP? And Cooper Kupp's numbers, production, gives him a chance that is rare at the wide receiver position to evaluate pregame. Twice, obviously, Brady went to the Super Bowl, won it, and did not win Super Bowl MVP, right? But Brady was always the overwhelming favorite if the New England Patriots were going to win the Super Bowl or the Tampa Bay Bucs were going to win the Super Bowl there. And it was surprising when it kind of played out that it didn't go his way. If it is Cooper Kupp, it won't be a surprise, because he's having maybe the single best wide receiver season the sport has ever seen. As we bring the radio audience into the fold, and we appreciate all those tuned in to the early line on Sports Grid Radio on a Wednesday morning, Kevin Walsh and Donnie Wrightside here breaking down the Super Bowl MVP odds. You see that Kupp, that legitimate chance that he has, because so much of Stafford's production is tied in to Cooper Kupp. I wonder, for Cincinnati, right, DRS, I'll ask it to you like this. Again, it's early, but Ja'Marr Chase is 22-1. Joe Mixon is 40-1. Of those two guys, are you more inclined to say Because Mixon's production less likely to be hamstrung to Joe Burrow, or Chase fit a comparable billing to Cooper Kupp where he can win Super Bowl MVP even if that means Burrow's going to have a big game?
Exactly, and that's the same reason we look at the quarterback market, right? Matthew Stafford 1, Joe Burrow 2, plus 115, plus 230. Right after that, the next two guys here, Cooper Kupp plus 550, which is obviously the top wide receiver for Matthew Stafford, and right behind him is Ja'Marr Chase. You're looking for explosive plays in the Super Bowl and memorable ones here, because Mixon might have a fine day here, but you're also going up against maybe the best run defense and best overall defense in the NFL. So if you were to tell me before this game that if you're taking a look here and saying, okay, Joe Mixon at running back, what's his ceiling in this game? 17 carries, 85 yards or so. I mean, that's not enough to get it done unless he scores like three touchdowns, which I doubt that's going to take place. So when you're looking for the wide receiver position, you're also talking about big moments in the game. If this game is close late, is it going to be a Joe Mixon 45-yard run into the end zone that seals the win? Or is it probably going to be Joe Burrow avoiding Aaron Donald, throwing a jump ball over Jalen Ramsey to Ja'Marr Chase so he actually finishes with 7 catches for a 110 and a score, and that score was in the biggest part of the game? That's the way I would look at it here, but I would go more wide receiver, particularly Ja'Marr Chase, over Joe Mixon.
I think the thing for Mixon, at least, though, is – I don't think Chase has as much of a chance as Kupp to take it off of his quarterback, where if Mixon has multiple rushing touchdowns, well, that means that Burrow maybe doesn't have multiple passing touchdowns. Fascinating market to follow. We will continue to follow that throughout here on the Early Line. Come right back live on a Wednesday.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Back right here. Wednesday morning, talking through the big story in the NFL this morning involving Brian Flores and his lawsuit against the NFL. And to help us understand the legal ramifications of everything involving this story is Sports Grid sports business analyst Rick Haro. Rick, thanks so much for joining us here this morning to talk about obviously a big developing story.
Well, it's a big developing story, and I can add a bit, but not everything, because the complaint has allegations in it where you have no idea whether they're true or not. And a lot of it is based on Brian Flores's perception. And some people would say, well, back it up with facts, but that's what trials and that's what next steps are all about. I also have the advantage of knowing Steve Ross very well, and this is not a character issue. I will tell you that he is the most competitive billionaire I know, but he's also the most competitive, one of the most men, most competitive humans I know. And frankly, he's the last, you know, Chris Greer has been his front office for years, and he's African-American. So I'm not privy to the allegations, and I'm not privy to the complaint, and I'm not involved in the suit. I have a lot of friends, obviously, here. But I will say that man is incredibly competitive, and I will tell you that he would hire a yellow person, a blue person, a green person, if that helps him win games.
If we take a look at everything,
Rick,
that's going on now.
Go ahead, Don.
Oh, go ahead, Jew. No, I was just going to follow up with that. Just on like the lawsuit itself here. The NFL, obviously, it's big business here. And we always know like they don't want to have conflict with heading into the Super Bowl. That is their main stage. That is the marquee event that they have. And now you're seeing that week buildup where you're getting all those good vibes for the Super Bowl between Cincinnati and the Rams. Just talk about maybe the lawsuit and the timing of the lawsuit with the NFL and how they can deal with this.
Well, and you know, things happen when they happen. That's a stupid comment. But if you remember, a lot of the Deflategate controversy was before and during a Super Bowl, Super Bowl week. One of the big issues, which is a blessing or curse, this time it's a curse, is you got hundreds of thousands of media, maybe 20,000 reputable journalists at most, all hanging around L.A. for the salacious story. And now we've got 2 weeks of no games, except if you count Pro Bowl, to research, figure things out, and I only mean this in certain contexts, make things up. And so this becomes a very difficult week for the NFL. I'm sure Tom Brady, the leak of what he was intending, probably didn't come at a worse time for everybody, just because he needed to go out on his own way. And now I was reading a lot of the tweets with Ben Volen and others about, does he retire as a Buck? Does he retire as a Patriot? Was it a snub? Does he like everybody on the team? And all of that stuff takes away from Tom Brady, the GOAT, and we all understand that.
Rick, I know perhaps it's a difficult position, certainly with some of your ties to Stephen Ross, and we understand that this is all allegations at the moment, but one of the more eye-popping allegations is the $100,000 allegedly offered to Brian Flores to lose games in his first season. I'm not asking you to tell me whether you believe that is true or not. I'm asking you if that is to be true, the ramifications of that, because that feels like it could be the most damning thing to the Miami Dolphins, where they were basically then going far and beyond out of their way to lose football games.
If it's true, it's significant. If Bounty Gate with all of the payments was true at this time, you would say it's significant. Some of it turned out to be evidentially correct. A lot of it turned out not to be. If an owner wakes up and says, I'm going to lose every game, sell at a profit and move on, well, that's a terrible thing. But the devil is in the details, and the devil is whether it's accurate. And I'm glad you didn't ask me whether I think so, because I have my opinion, and I'm just going to, you know, keep that to myself for a little while.
Rick, this lawsuit that's coming in, obviously, because all eyes are on this with Brian Flores, and I know it's just being brought up now. Is this more of an NFL league issue, or is this going to be an NFL league issue and also Brian Flores going after individual teams at the same time?
Combination. And, you know, it becomes a big issue relative to how he positioned the lawsuit, because he picked a couple of teams, but he also sued the league. The league has been process responsive. I'm not sure whether everybody takes the Rooney Rule seriously, but the Rooney Rule is taken seriously at its implementation and its policy level at the highest levels. I do know that because I've been around it. And so the discussion becomes a league-wide issue. And then we're opening it up again at a time where the NFL was reaching amazing numbers with, you know, six of the best playoff games in the history of the world, television ratings incredible, $111 billion TV contract, and on and on. And the most important issue to the NFL, as we all know, is the integrity of the game within the four corners and the 60 minutes. And so that is sacrosanct.
So also, obviously, with the allegations placed towards the New York Giants and the Denver Broncos about the hiring process, there is incredibly interesting when you also, Rick, pair that with the fact that we saw Brian Flores really recently, and I don't know if it's officially been withdrawn, but was throughout the hiring process with the Houston Texans as well as the New Orleans Saints. Is Brian Flores now taking legal action against the NFL? Can he still seek employment within the league here? Does that all have to be halted? Do we have any knowledge of how that process is set to play out?
No, I don't think there's anything legal that says if you file a lawsuit, you cannot apply. It just would be very difficult to believe that he is going to be on somebody's payroll, at least until the lawsuit is ended. And I'm not going to say it's parched earth forever, because there's no ever forever. But, you know, in some of these allegations, I'm not even going to, you know, comment on the, you know, John Elway disheveled allegation. And does that count as an interview? You know, there's a lot of stuff that is usually discussed internally when you look at the complaint. The complaint has given media fodder all over the world, some media and some fake media. Here I go again, the last, 20 hours. And so that's not good for anybody. And I'm sure he has his reasons for taking the next step. I'm sure he feels disrespected. There are a lot of people on the other side talking about his communication skills. Very few people talk about how he's not a good defensive coach. You know, I loved, as a Dolphin fan, the defenses that he conjured up, but it obviously takes more. So this is the first of many chapters in this saga.
If we're taking a look at monetary damages, obviously, that come with a lawsuit here, Rick, is there a time frame on how these typically get settled? Could this be long and drawn out? The only reason I bring it up like this, Sean Watson, it's been a while. We haven't had anything come down the pike that says he's going to be in the clear either way. The NFL probably wants this off the table sooner and later, but also take a look from Brian Flores' perspective here. He wants changes to be made in the NFL. Is there a time frame that you'd probably be looking at this of when it might either A, go to trial, B, be settled, or some changes to actually be made to the Rooney Rule and also monetary damages?
Before I answer that question, you want some breaking news?
Yes.
Washington Commanders. That's the new Redskins name. Anyway, I just saw it.
I just blew it.
Yeah. Right, exactly. Sorry. You asked me A, I answer B. But people want to know about B. So what was your question again? I remember your question again. It takes a long time. This is stuff that is, it goes to the heart, the allegations of how a league and a business runs. So unless it's a capitulation and unless it goes away, it's not going to be, you know, settled overnight. People have to respect positions and get lawyers and move forward on all of this. And again, the timing of Super Bowl, it becomes very difficult.
There's still certainly a lot to unpack here. I know Flores this morning will be talking to a number of outlets, and I'm sure that will help kind of add some clarity to this situation. But, Rick, we appreciate everything that you could provide us this morning. As we know, this is all still certainly fresh news. That is Rick Haro, Sports Grid's sports business analyst, helping us here on a Wednesday morning. Coming up against the break, a lot more to break down. This is The Early Line on Sports Grid.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
The Early Line rolls on. We have some preview set up for you with some great college games as well as the NBA, but the news keeps piling on. The Washington Commanders. It is official. The handle's now at Commanders. They definitely had to pay for that. It is official, though, no longer the Washington football team. The Washington Commanders, Donnie. The uniforms are out. The W on the front of the helmet looks like it'll be your absolute favorite. The black uniforms look quite sweet here. What do we think? It's the Washington Commanders.
You know, there's the three uniforms. Obviously, the black uniform is the alt one. It doesn't look anything like the Washington franchise whatsoever. They did keep the wonky W on the helmet, which I sort of disagree with. But you're looking at the, you know, clean look of the, you know, burgundy helmet, the white jersey looks okay, and then the full red uniform, which I am a fan of. But I don't know, the W on the front of the helmet, as if like Wisconsin and the all black, I don't know about it. It'll take some time to get used to. But again, you know, it took a long time to call it the Washington football team, the San Diego Chargers. I'm finally away from that. It'll take a little bit of time to think about them as the Commanders. But it's just nice. Any name but Washington football team was better. I didn't even care what they named the team as long as they had a nickname so I can just use the term the Commanders versus the Eagles, the Commanders versus the Cowboys, not the W, you know, FT versus the Cowboys. At least they have a name, Kevin, and that is a start.
Man, so the Washington Commanders, I'm fine with it. I'm not blown away. You know, a couple years ago, I said it should be the Washington Roses.
Yeah,
that was obviously much better.
Blown away. I love people out here. Like, that name is terrible. They could have picked any name in the book, and 90% of Twitter would be like, that's terrible. So, I don't know. Anything's better than a team with no name.
Yeah. I will say, though, there is, and you were talking about this last night on radio, other than just slapping the word Commanders across the chest in the red uniform, there's nothing about this that's Commanders. The uniforms are a little different. You know what? Like, the logo is basically the W. Commanders is a placeholder. They could have released the same thing, and it could have been Brigade, Armada, Presidents. Yeah. It looks like seemingly no difference here. Commanders is just, again, to now not be the football team, which is, I guess, what you wanted.
It is what you wanted. Also, this is what I needed to see. I needed next-level trolling out of the Washington football team. Like, you want to go head-to-head with the division? Slap that star on the helmet, but just put it in burgundy. That would be sensational. Are you kidding me?
Oh,
if you said,
yeah,
we're the new star the in town at this point and go up against the Cow, oh, my. Exactly. The Washington Stars, and slap that star on the helmet and be like, oh, yeah, Dallas has a star. They did. Dallas has a star on the helmet. We didn't know that. That would have been fantastic stuff. But then again, it's the Washington football team, so nothing surprises. But you're right. Hey, let's change this franchise for good. I don't know. Let's slap that'd Commanders on. It was the same look I got back with the New York Jets when they slapped New York on it. I'm like, what are you doing? Like, what are you doing? You're, mm-hmm, you're like, I didn't know that was the Jets until you put New York on it. Oh, my goodness.
The Washington Stars would have been great. They could, or they should have, the Washington Capitals, they could have put a star, yes, and they would have been fine.
Yeah.
Wait, it turns out there were definitely better options out there than the Commanders. It is what it is, though. It's Commanders. Again, like, we're not jazzed up. I'm not running to the window, although I'm sure Dave Sharapan will have about six hats and, you know, every color you could imagine by the time they press the release button there. Let's move past this. Let's talk about what today offers, because it offers a lot of good stuff. We'll start with college basketball here. Let's go with the ranked games first. We go to the Big Ten, Wisconsin, Illinois. Excited for this one. This Illinois team is really interesting. Certainly dealt with some injuries this year between Coburn and Curbelo. The 6.5 marker certainly would suggest that it should be a full go for the Illini against Johnny Davis and the Badgers. 6.5 point spread, 140 total. Big Ten battle DRS. What jumps out?
Yeah, not a high tempo in this one, but if we're also taking a look at defenses here, Wisconsin, not a great defensive team, but we do know, obviously, Illinois is number two in conference play for the efficiency end of defense, but also effective field goal percentage, number one overall. They are devastating defenders inside of the three-point line, Kevin. Number one in the Big Ten and only giving up 43% from inside the arc. But you're going to hear this a lot throughout college basketball season from me. And if you equate it like back in the day, like, you know, I was in high school and grade school. I used to love when a team played a zone. It's like, shoot all the three-pointers you want. It was a lot of fun. But you know what I didn't like? Good man-to-man defense, where every time I caught the ball outside the three-point shot, outside the three-point arc, somebody was already defending me in my face. So the reason I bring that up is here is you're taking a look at usage rate behind the three-point line, and you're talking about Illinois on defense. I just told you how good they are inside the arc. Now, they're a decent defensive team from the three-point arc out at 34%. But get this, number one in conference play at not letting you shoot the three-point shot. So if you're a good three-point shooting team, very effective behind there, they're going to limit how many times you're actually going to take those shots. And then if we flip it over here, Kevin, to Wisconsin's defense, guess this. Guess what? Number two in conference play at chasing you off of the three-point line. So more buckets inside, less three-point shots usually means a tougher defensive battle. And if we're taking a look at Wisconsin and Illinois here, I automatically think to myself, this game probably is a legitimate chance to go under. Don't love the game per se itself, but if I'm playing it, I'm playing it to the under at 140 at this point.
And sometimes we talk about the kind of regression to the mean, right? Wisconsin was played 8 straight overs. Last two games go under. Illinois opened it up 7-2 to the over at home, right? I think it was 6-2 to the over at home. You've now seen two of the last three go under. So sometimes those things find their balance. We're seeing it in the NBA with the Dallas Mavericks, who are cashing unders at a near 70% hit rate, right? And I think they've now played 3-4 games consecutive towards that over. Water can find that level at times there, and a 140 number perhaps too high if these teams played a little bit closer to the vest, as this is a big matchup in conference here right now. Both enter 8-2 in conference, looking to keep pace with Michigan State, who was on the ropes last night to the Terps. Let's go to Marquette and Villanova here. This is a really interesting game. Nova ranked 12th in the nation, Marquette 24th. Marquette is playing some great basketball, and they enter this, though, DRS, covering 8 games in a row, but one of those was a cover in a loss at Providence, catching 2.5 points here. You look at Villanova, laying a number on the road. That's usually what you expect in Big East play, but the Golden Eagles have been putting up some tremendous results here. Maybe the 4 a little bit disrespectful, or perhaps the 133.5 total jumps out to you.
Yeah, it could be right. Looking at these two teams on the season, 16-5 for Villanova on the season. Marquette 15-7, 9-2 in conference play for the Wildcats, 7-4 for Marquette. And also Villanova won 9 of 10 games. Actually, the one loss in there was to Marquette. And also take a look at Marquette, 7 in a row before a loss to a very good Providence team. If we take a look at Villanova, what did they do well in conference play? Just about everything, Kevin. Number one in offensive efficiency, number one in defensive efficiency here. So sometimes what it comes down to is what you do well and what you can stop here. The one interesting part here about Villanova, there are 11 teams in Big East play. They are 11th, Kevin, in chasing you off of the three-point line. However, they defended extremely well. So they give up more three-point attempts than anybody in conference play, but at the same time are the best defense overall at holding you to around 29%. And the key indicator here in this one is if you're going to let teams shoot threes. Now, eventually you're hoping that you're going to make some of those. The reason I bring that up, Marquette, Kevin, number one in conference play at three-point percentage. That's 39%. So roughly 40% of their three-point shots are going down. And Villanova, who defends it well, but will let you shoot the three-point shot. This game is simple to me. If that number holds up with Villanova's defense at defending the three-point shot and Marquette finishes, let's just say 35% or below from three-point range, Villanova is going to win this game. But if Marquette shoots their average 40% or even higher, they're going to be in this game and should have a great chance to cover that plus four. But at the same time, it's hard to beat a team twice in a year. We hear that moniker. It's really not. If you beat a team before, what, are you not going to have confidence in playing them again? And you have them on your home court. But Villanova, to me, it's hard to overcome when one team is the best on offense and the best on defense, and you play the entire length of those 40 minutes. It usually catches up to you where the cream will rise to the top. But the way I look at this, Marquette does have a decent defense. I'm going to say Marquette at home, those three-point shots will go down, and they will keep it close within that number.
And that is a great, great game as well to follow live on In Play Sports tonight, 7 p.m. Eastern start time for Donnie and I on Sports Grid Radio. We've been following the college basketball markets live, and when you can reset them at the half, but even deeper into the games there, you get a sense, and we still, of course, know in college basketball, the value of being home is real. We know that always to be true there. So for Marquette, at that four number, if you start to see that run developing, it could make a lot of sense to eye them up there and see what they kind of can deliver as those runs, of course, come throughout college basketball. But we know Villanova always so good in the Big East. This will not be an easy task there for Marquette. But again, you talk about if they want to maybe give themselves a chance at taking a Big East crown off of Nova, this is going to be a must-win game. I'll let people know as well, an interesting game tonight. Kentucky moved up to fifth in the country after their dominant win against Kansas. Return home, SEC play, and lay 15.5 to Vanderbilt. It's just a classic letdown spot. Those are things that we see all throughout college sports and pro sports. Something to keep an eye on. But we have one more college game to get to. No one's ranked in this one, but it doesn't mean there is not opportunity. Plus some interesting NBA action, including the Lakers continuing to play without LeBron. Back home, can they cover against the Portland Trail Blazers? We break that all down after a quick break right here on Sports Grid.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Finishing out college basketball. A game that isn't, jump off the page, ranked, but this is where you will often see Donnie take a look for those college basketball team totals. Off to a great start. I absolutely blame Donnie for Notre Dame not being able to even touch 50 points, much less the 70 that they would have needed to beat him on a team total. Creighton last night, a wild finish in their upset against UConn, still staying under the team total. Donnie transforming to an under guy? Is that what we have here? We'll find out. It's UNC Greensboro hosting VMI, the Cadets, Donnie, as a 2.5-point favorite and a total for the game at 137.5. What jumps out for this basketball game?
Yes, let's be the reason of change here, Kevin, and be a chameleon as I talk about any handicapping business, because sometimes we take a look at unders. Today, we are taking a look at an over. Now, having said that, UNC Greensboro has a terrible defense here, or actually a decent defense. VMI has a terrible defense, but the tempos are kind of different here. VMI likes to go fast. UNC Greensboro likes to slow it down. But here's what we like here. Effective field goal percentage, number one in conference play for VMI. Here's some of the outlandish stuff. Now, you take a look at the Southland Conference here. This is what I love, because sometimes you talk about Villanova's and Marquette's. Like, yeah, they like to shoot the three-point shot. And in conference play with that conference, those numbers make sense. These are the ones I love. Take a look at VMI. 39.5%, number one in conference play from three-point range. How about Greensboro's defense, Kevin? They give up 38% from three-point range, dead last in conference play. Also inside of the arc. 58.5% shooting for VMI, number one in conference play. But here's my favorite part, and here's what makes the most sense. It's very rare you get into some of these numbers. VMI is not even the number one volume shooting team in conference play from the three-point line, but they are number two. Kevin, 53% of their shots come from behind the three-point arc. And why is this perfect? There's 10 teams in conference play. You know who's 10th at allowing you to shoot three-point shots at 56% of the time? Is Greensboro. So you have a team that loves to shoot the three-point shot, makes it at a high volume, a team that can't defend it to save their life and will let you shoot the three-point shot. That is VMI. So you look at the total here, right? 137.5, a slight dog here for VMI. On that alone, if you can get a little bit more tempo out of Greensboro on offense and those three-point shots go down for VMI, because you talk about styles that make fights, Kevin. We talk about chasing you off the three-point line. This one is basically saying, we know you're really good at shooting threes. Go ahead and shoot as many and as often as you would like. I'm taking VMI's team total over 67.5 tonight. Go into those lower conferences, Kevin. Find those gems. Let's see if we can pull out another winning night in college basketball.
And I just want to give people, though, just a snapshot here of these two teams, their last listed totals, right? So UNC Greensboro, last five games, the totals were, right? 127.5, 122.5, 137, 129, and 125. VMI, their last five games, 160, 161, 147.5, 153, and 151.5. So they're kind of meeting in the middle. But if this is then a game that VMI can dictate there, it certainly right pushes in the direction of that over. A great one to follow on the college basketball card. Let's shift our attention to the NBA side. Some news around LeBron James, who will still be out not only for tonight's game, but perhaps a couple more. Hey, listen, you want to make it back for the Knicks game on a Saturday? People would love to see that, but we'll leave that till when that becomes the time here. The Los Angeles Lakers, a four-point favorite at home against the Portland Trail Blazers. Anthony Davis, his first game back for the Los Angeles Lakers. Probably his first game, I guess, in the crypto arena, if I had to imagine here. I know his status remains questionable, but I'm not sure why he would miss this game if he was able to play against Atlanta. Russ has been, you know, with varying degrees of success here, but this is a Portland team that I have to be honest with you, Donnie, when I look at the number, I think they might be getting a little bit too much respect. I know we don't often say that because the Lakers are so bad against the number. Same record ATS as these Portland Trailblazers.
Yeah, it is. And it's an interesting matchup for sure. 222 is a total here. So expecting points here, Trailblazers at that plus 3.5 point number. But looking at this, because sometimes, you know, we try to get invested. Sure, sides are great. Totals are great in basketball games. In-game plays are fantastic. But I seemingly think that sometimes you can make a more educated decision on some of these prop bets that you have, because you immediately have LeBron James out of the lineup. We know Russell Westbrook's usage rate goes way up. But the first thing I look at are the anticipated starting lineups. Malik Monk back in that lineup. He's going to get his shots tonight. And also, I'm very intrigued by Anthony Davis now saying, okay, if LeBron James and his 20 to 25 shots aren't out here, it's my time to shine. I came back from this injury. I'm feeling pretty good. And now also feed me the basketball, because you go up and down that lineup. Russell Westbrook, he'll get his shots. Malik Monk will be that secondary option from the three-point line. Avery Bradley doesn't care about scoring. Neither does Stanley Johnson. So somebody's going to have to take those volume shots, which will be Westbrook and Anthony Davis. But also from a Portland Trailblazers perspective here, you take a look at CJ McCollum and Simons, two guys at the guard position position. They are going to be firing away here, and we'll see if that usage rate for Nurkic. Is it a great game by capping perspective? No, but there are some intricacies that you can use and say, hey, no LeBron James, no Dame Lillard. Other guys are going to have to step up, and the two guys with those high usage rates, Russell Westbrook and Anthony Davis for me.
Yeah. And I think for Russ, what we've seen this season, there's been 15 games without LeBron. In 11 of those basketball games, he has gone, oh, at least scored 20 points. Now, his listed number tonight might be a tick higher than that, maybe 22 and a half, which he did miss against Atlanta, but that game without AD had 35 against Charlotte, and he did cash a points prop over in his game against Philadelphia. So Russ scoring certainly could make some sense here against a Portland Trail Blazers team who has one of the worst defenses, of course, in the entire NBA. Keeping it moving here with the Philadelphia 76ers game against the Washington Wizards. I really want to talk about this because, of course, Joel Embiid remains one of the most interesting players in the entire league when it comes to his listed points prop. Let me actually take a beat now because it's not up just yet. I want to mention something with Gary Trent Jr. and we'll tie it all in. Gary Trent Jr. last night, for the fifth game in a row, scored 30 or more points. Gary Trent Jr.'s points props check in 16.5. All right, 17.5. Okay, 18.5. Cashing over consistently. What is the book meant to do with a guy who is averaging less than 20 a game? They can't all of a sudden make his points prop 26 and a half. It takes a while for the books to move on a guy like a Gary Trent Jr. Now, we saw it took them a while to move on a Joel Embiid. And for the first time in a long time, they were able to make themselves a little bit of money against the Los Angeles Lakers if they were certainly needing the number to go under, as he scored only 26. The next game, right back at it against Sacramento, 36. Embiid missed a game against Memphis, needing, you know, a planned day off. Back here against Washington, Donnie, I don't know why we're not just going to line up Embiid 30-plus at a Sixers win on a player performance double when it's listed. It feels like it makes the most sense.
Yeah, they came off a big win to the Philadelphia 76ers without Joel Embiid. There seems to be some high energy in the building. When we talk about high energy, one of the guys coming into his own also, outside of Joel Embiid, which you can just factor in, 25-plus points, 30-plus points, you know he's going to get after it. He's healthy, and now he's rested. There won't be any minutes restrictions on him. But you know who's not getting a minutes restriction lately here for the Philadelphia 76ers? Tyrese Maxey. Look at his last, six games. 46 minutes, 42 minutes, 35 minutes, 38 minutes, 41 minutes, 43 minutes. Each one of those games, actually every game he's played over the past month or so, double digits or more with multiple assists and rebounds here. Tyrese Maxey coming into his own, which also leads to the bigger picture here, where maybe that's more of a dangling price to include Tyrese Maxey with Ben Simmons to get another superstar. But for the time being, Joel Embiid was out. That should have been an auto loss to the Memphis Grizzlies. And Tyrese Maxey was a major influence in that game, scoring 33 points, 8 assists, and also only going 1 of 4 from 3-point range, which tells you only had 3 from behind the arc and still finished with 33 points and 23 field goal attempts. The kid's feeling it. Much like you talk about Gary Trent Jr., sometimes, Kevin, when you look towards these prop bets, you just want to go with heat checks. There's no in this game that Tyrese Maxey scores 33, shoots 23 times, goes, you know what? Big Joe's back. I'm going to shoot 6 to 7 times. He's going to get after it tonight, too.
And if Doc does a good job, you can balance your lineups there, right? Yeah. Embiid's on the bench. Let me get a little more Maxey out there. Let him control the tempo if he's playing that well. Washington also on that back-to-back announced yesterday that they're going to be without at least another week. No games featuring Bradley Beal. We'll see how the Washington situation continues to develop there as they're really, really struggling of recent. You want to talk about struggling. Sacramento have lost 7 in a row. Well, they go into a game against the Brooklyn Nets, who've lost 5 in a row. And the Brooklyn Nets playing on the second leg of a back-to-back in Sacramento are a 3.5-point favorite. The total right now has continued to bounce up, up and up into that 230-ish range here. Donnie, my question is, and we've seen this. Now, here's the issue again. Talk about results from last night. We said to people, hey, listen, Golden State maybe will bench some guys on the second leg of a back-to-back going to San Antonio. 2.5-point favorite when we had mentioned that. They bench Steph, Clay, Wiggins, closes a 6-point dog. Not only do they win the game, okay, they go on out there and win it by 4, covering the early Sacramento bets, which was a nightmarish collapse from the Spurs side of it all. With that being said, though, Donnie, is anyone surprised if Kyrie and or Harden miss this game here for the Brooklyn Nets?
Harden sits out. I wouldn't be all that surprised. But then again, he's already missed a couple games. It's not like, whew, man, I need a break after playing 20 straight games. That's not the case. But the guy that should never be sitting out here on the road is Kyrie Irving. He doesn't play at home. And also, if you take a look at the game last night, he finished, which is very interesting. I took a points prop in the morning of 26.5, and he finished with 26 points. But later in the day, also took it at 24.5. So went 1-1. And the reason being, watching that last couple minutes, Kyrie Irving wasn't in there. So maybe they were saying, like, okay, we're not going to play the last 6 to 7 minutes here to try to save your legs for tomorrow night's game in Sacramento. So I think that will play out. But if I'm looking from a usage perspective, I honestly would be shocked. If Harden, Irving, and Mills, one of those three guys doesn't play, I would be shocked by that. Because Patty Mills, first of all, is more of a bench guy here. This is why you brought him on the team. And I'm sure he's pretty happy to say, hey, look, anytime I'm going to get in the starting lineup, I can hoist 7, 8, 9, 10 threes. I'm going to do it. Kyrie Irving, sitting him on a back-to-back, knowing that he doesn't play home games anyway, and James Harden coming off of a few games that he missed, finally coming back last night and playing well, I would be surprised if any one of those three actually sat out tonight. But more again, I'm probably looking towards Kyrie Irving, because if we did have to try to guess, maybe James Harden won't play as many minutes. Maybe Patty Mills won't play as many minutes. But there's really no reason for Kyrie Irving to have any restrictions again. Since he doesn't play home games, he can only play on the road. Use him or lose him, as we like to say.
Here's the thing, though, why I do think you probably see them play. First of all, Harden doesn't really like resting. Like, we've seen Harden go out there on his own before. If Kyrie Irving says, I need a day off, Harden might Ben Simmons it and go home and say, I'm never playing for this team again. This is outrageous. What do you need a day off for? We're going back home soon, and we won't see you. Like, you better be playing, right? But also, Donnie, in the heat of this West Coast trip, after this game against Sacramento, at Utah, at Denver, you've already lost 5 in a row. Kevin Durant has to be looking around like, are you guys serious? Really? Like, you two aren't enough to go out there and win some games here? Like, can we figure this out, please? We're embarrassing ourselves, it almost feels like here. I think this is a spot for Brooklyn where you need that, you need to cleanse the palate a little bit here, because there's already tension rocking around. Kyrie Irving's like, yeah, man, it's been difficult for all three of us to be on the floor this season. Hopefully, you know, the pieces come together when the timing's right. What? What? Hey, man, do you know why you guys aren't out there all together? You! What? Outrageousness. Quickly as well, before we hit the break, Davion Mitchell, 4 games as a starter in his NBA career, has gone over his points prop in every single game, has gone over his assist prop in every single game. Been phenomenal for Sacramento. The early line closes out with Listen Up next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Last segment of the day, we're live on a Wednesday, SiriusXM Channel 159. We are the grid. Both myself, Donnie Wrightside, and Kevin Wall setting the table from 7 to 9 a.m. before we hand it off to Ben Stevens and the morning after. A lot of stuff going on in the news. The greatest of all time is retiring. Yep. Coaching changes in the NFL. Absolutely. But let's not let Major League Baseball off the hook. So you listen up. Time is ticking here, folks, on Major League Baseball. And obviously, there are much bigger things going on in the sports world, particularly in the NFL, that we are caring about, worrying about, and talking about. I understand it. But on the back burner is the Major League Baseball season. We are into February. Donnie, we got to April till everything gets underway. They'll figure things out. I'm not so sure of that. The Major League Baseball Union and the Major League Baseball owners always at an impasse. It always seems like it's baseball that handles it in the worst possible way, where you end the season in November, you don't do anything for months on end, and then try to ram down billions of dollars in a pie and try to piecemeal to each side here. And it never works out in anybody's favor here. So the reason I bring this up, it is February the 2nd. Pitchers and catchers are supposed to report in about 2 weeks to Major League Baseball. Spring training games usually kick off the end of February, early March, and off we go into the baseball regular season. Major League Baseball, one of those sports where people continue to say is dying. Well, technically, from a viewer's perspective, it might be a little bit. From a health perspective on money, not so much. But you need to start these seasons on time. You can't miss spring training. You can't push back the baseball season to May at this point here. What is going on in Major League Baseball? You can't divvy up billions of dollars and do it fairly between both sides. And it always includes missing games. Baseball, you can't just start and see you on April 1st. You got to get spring training in. Any delay in spring training is going to delay the season. And I love Major League Baseball. Don't do this to me again, baseball, and leave us out here high and dry. You know who's not going to leave you high and dry? Ben Stevens in the Morning After, coming up over the next 3 hours right here on The Grid. Stay tuned.